Follow Paddy Power on Snapchat. The username is ThePaddyPower, and we promise there won't be any boring snaps about gigs, the weather, or the gym.
Hello and welcome to this Monday postcast. I'm Maddie Flair and I'm joined by Nick Watts in the studio. Tom Siegel's joined us as well as Paul Binfield on the line too. This postcast is mainly going to be looking back at the action that happened at Epsom and elsewhere, but we will get some Royal Ascot tips from the lads and we'll talk about the Scottish Sprint Cup briefly as well. Now, Tom, first off, what did you get up to this weekend?
A bit of cricket as usual, Maddie. I was umpiring on Saturday. My son plays for a team in Fleet down by me, so I was umpiring on Sunday. I went to Epsom on Saturday, had a very good time, if a bit of a frustrating one, which we'll get into in a minute. But that was it, Epsom on Saturday, bit of cricket on Sunday. What about you, Watsy?
It was actually my second wedding anniversary the weekend, Tom. So I had to trail around some antique centre for most of the afternoon. I just got back in time for 4:30 to sneak through and watch the derby away from the eyes of the in-laws. And so I literally just got there as they were in the stalls and had to exit and be sociable as soon as they'd crossed the line. But I did get to see the action at least. But
don't make it sound too bad. I'm sure you had a nice time in the end.
Are you like a budding David Dickinson or whatever he's called? Do you snap up some bargains on these antiques roadshow type hunts you do?
I do like in those round antiques places, but not on a Saturday afternoon when the derby's on. I would have preferred to be in front of the ITV watching it, but you've got to do your duty sometimes, Tom, and
we'll be seeing you on bargain hunt in the near future, you and your missus.
You never know.
You put the application in, haven't you?
I don't even know if that program's still going, but yeah, if it is.
We'll get it going. We'll make sure it is. Yeah.
I'm putting you forward.
Yeah, he's going to have a whole army of people putting him forward to go on bargain hunt. Binners, how are you? What did you get up to over the weekend?
Very busy weekend at Epsom, Maddie. And then I did the double header, actually. I went on to Toaster for the Greyhound Derby.
You were at Shanty for the Breeders' Jockey Club.
No, I should have made it a treble, shouldn't I? But I went to Toaster for the Greyhound Derby. I'm not really a dog man, but I have to say it was an impressive night out. There was a big crowd there. The fee was £25 to get in, and they still had a big crowd. So well done to Toaster, and it was great to be there, and the buzz around the final was really good.
Oh, I can tell you, Binners, my greyhound that is sitting at my feet here's ears turned up when you said you weren't a greyhound fan. You are not on the Christmas card list.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry, Thomas. I didn't know I was already, actually.
Tom, we had a greyhound in the Racing Post offices the other day. Can you bring yours in?
Yeah.
Starting a petition. Gorgeous. Can we have a greyhound like on the postcast? That would be brilliant.
She's fantastic. Best dogs in the world.
Bruce is a big fan of the greyhounds, so we'll give that a go. Anyway, we'll talk about some horse racing, shall we? Derby first off, Tom. What are your immediate thoughts from the race?
It was twofold, Maddie. I was delighted because I admit I had a few quid on him a long time ago, Massa. I was disappointed because I went off him on the day for only a stupid reason. I just didn't have confidence in the Godolphin getting one home. After 10 years of sort of being, continually hoping that they'd come good, I sort of lost my patience with them and went away from them. But in terms, let's be honest about it. Charlie Appleby this year has had a better record in the classics than Aidan O'Brien. Mm. Massal's been placed, Wild Illusion's been placed, Soliloquy ran well, Wild Illusion ran well in the Guineas, Symbolised ran well in Ireland. He's for the number of runners he's had, he's actually done better than Aidan O'Brien. So why I sat there thinking that Massa, I wasn't going to run a race, I'll never know, but I did, and that's why it was sort of mixed emotions. Obviously, having been proved sort of slightly right since his Solario days, I was pleased for the horse, but the overriding feeling I had was that was the one that got away, because 10 years ago we would have all been on that at 20-1, every one of us, Nick, Pinners, you, Maddie, because it was only the Godolphin factor that made him the price he was. He had the second best form. He had a pedigree that said he was going to stay. You could even make excuses for his Guineas defeat, couldn't you, with the draw and everything. His form, he beat Romanized, didn't he, in the Solario. He was very unlucky in the Breeders' Cup. He's just a very good horse. So why he was sitting there at 20-1 was only the Godolphin factor. And, you can't blame us all for not backing him, because that over the years we've done our brains backing them. But that, I think, was the reason why he was allowed to be the price he was. So it was a bit of a mixed emotions for me. Pleased for the race, pleased for the horse. but disappointed personally that I didn't make a few quid out of it, or a few more quid.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because we did mention it last, but I think it was you, Watson, who touched on that how many Godolphin horses had come into Classics looking like they had a good chance, and then it just didn't go through. So it was refreshing to see them finally get their Derby winner in the Blue Silks, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. But going on from what Tom just said, the view of Godolphin must have been reinforced in a lot of people's minds after what happened in the Oaks on Friday, with obviously Barry Doyle winning that Wild Illusion, very well fancied, couldn't get the job done, although she ran okay. So we're probably going into Friday night, Saturday morning, looking, centering around the O'Brien runners and what can run well out of them, rather than thinking about Massar too much, because, you know, often 2000 Guineas form is the best form going into the Derby, but I was too busy looking at Saxon Warrior and what he could do and forgetting about what a good race Massar had run in third. And those two things combined probably switch people on to Ballydoyle and away from Godolphin, hence it going off at a decent price. But, you know, fair play to Tom. He called it very early, as early as the Solario last season. But, yeah, obviously did stay very well, and it was a good winner. I don't think there's any excuses for anything in behind. It was a clear-cut victory. Massar's a very good horse. I look forward to him locking horns again, maybe, with Saxon Warrior in Ireland. I think I'd still be with Massar, actually.
Yeah, it was interesting. Someone said a poll who would go off favourite. That's quite an interesting one. Massar, he's very straightforward, very uncomplicated, isn't he? He's so well balanced. He handled Epsom beautifully. Binnis, how do they bet for the Irish Derby? And there's also some Eclipse betting as well, isn't there? Roaring Lion, perhaps he could go that way?
Yeah, I'll start with the Eclipse, Maddie. Roaring Lion and Massar are 3-1 joint favourites. We can't separate them at the moment. Charlie Appleby, a press morning this morning, indicating that Massar might go there. 5-1 Saxon Warrior, 8-1 Cliffs of Moher and Cracksman in its 10 bar. And as for the Irish Derby, yeah, we do make Saxon Warrior a slight favourite to overturn the form with Massar. 5-4 favourite, 6-4 Massar. 7-1 DXB, and then it's big prices the rest, 14-1 Delano Roosevelt and 25 bar.
Okay, excellent. Tom, a final word on the Derby for you. Just wondering what your thoughts on Saxon Warrior were, because he was dubbed as this unbeatable force and he finished fourth in the end.
I'm absolutely certain he didn't run his race, Maddie. I know. It just didn't do anything like a top-class horse. We know he's a top-class horse because of his Racing Post-Trophy form. We know it because of his Guineas form. Now, we can can always sit around and make excuses for why he maybe looked better than he was. But at no stage during the Epsom on Saturday did he do anything out of the ordinary. He never picked up. He never travelled that well. He was under pressure before half these horses. To my way of thinking, there was something up. I don't know whether he stumbled out the stalls. There was people talking about that, and maybe knocked himself or something. And obviously, stall one is a big issue. I love the way that racing pundits or people say, "Oh, stall one's not an issue when 0 from 146 or something over a mile and a half from stall one." It obviously makes life difficult for him, but he never did anything that out of the ordinary. And we know he's better than that. He has to be better than that because he just never picked up. Just stayed, you know. Good horses, as you guys know, Nick will back me up here, even if they don't win or don't stay, they tend to look like good horses, whatever the situations they're under. On Saturday, Saxon Warrior didn't look like a good horse to me at any stage. He was fourth in the Derby, so obviously he's high class, but he never did anything out of the ordinary to make me think that he's the horse that people talked about. Therefore, all that we'd seen before. Therefore, I personally think there's got to be something up. I think it's very interesting that the fact that they are still planning on the Irish Derby. So they obviously don't think the trip's an issue. They don't think, they think he just didn't, something wasn't right. There's some mitigating circumstances. And I would be surprised if Massar went to the Irish Derby, because I think taking on 7 O'Brien horses around the Curragh is a mighty task for anyone. And you'll have to be a superstar to you know, because they'll set up the race to, he'll have a massive target on his back now, Massar, for them. And it would be very hard to beat all the Ballydoyle there. But he could do, because he's a very good horse.
Okay. Well, see, you've long been a Roaring Lion fan. You've got to love what you saw for him. He was very straight in the finish. In terms of picking horses out from the Derby going forward, did anything go, that's going to win this race, or I want to keep my eye on this horse for this race?
Well, I think you've just mentioned him, because he's just come forward from run to run. I mean, if you think back to the Craven, he was absolutely thrashed by Massel, wasn't he? And, you know, I thought at the time he's got to be a little bit better than that and what we saw as a two-year-old. And, yeah, he's backed it up. A good run in the Guineas. Obviously won the Dante last time. Probably didn't quite see out a mile and four. The thing I was worried about before the race is he's always had a tendency to hang in the past when he's come under pressure. But in, under those circumstances, on the track, he ran an absolute screamer. I think dropped back to a mile and two. I think he's a huge player in the Eclipse and all the big mile and two races later on, because I think this is a really, really good horse. And I think, you know, 10 furlongs is right up his street. Be surprised if they went the mile and four again. And all those races are open to him. The good races, like we mentioned, the Eclipse International, all they kind of pick themselves, really.
Mm. Yeah, they do. Tom, before we move on, anything in behind that you want to look at for next time out?
Nope, nothing at all.
Nope.
Nothing at all. Didn't spot anything, Maddie. Nick's right about Roaring Lion. He's clearly a non-stayer. I personally don't think Massal's a mile and a half horse deep down. Mm. I'd prefer him to see him at 10. I wouldn't probably go for the Eclipse because I think that's a very difficult race for three-year-olds. It comes a little bit too soon after the Derby. I'd give him a break and wait for the Judd Monty and then Champions Day or the Arc and stuff like that. Mm. You know, sort of an old-fashioned sort of miss. Or maybe, you know, Ascot might be an option for him. The King George might be an option for him because that's turned into a sort of a weaker race, isn't it? The three-year-olds tend to avoid that race for some reason these days. So maybe that would be the race for him. I don't know, even though that's over a mile and a half. But no, nothing from in behind. Nothing really caught my eye. Anything for you? What about you? Did you spot anything?
Not really. I think a lot of people said Hazapur. He was a non-stayer, wasn't he? Blatant non-stayer. Not really. I do like DXB as a horse just in general.
Oh, yes. I forgot DXB. Forgot that. We've got to mention him.
Great run, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was brilliant. I was there on Saturday and coming past the post, you should have seen the Johnson team. They were jumping about with joy as though they'd won the race. Mm. The lad holding him up was in tears. It was tremendous
really?
To see. Yeah, he was absolutely delighted with him. And Sylvester got the big, you know, they nearly pulled him off the horse. They were so delighted for him. If ever there's a horse that has got St. Ledger written all over him, it's DXB, isn't it? He's a total stayer. Everything will be right. I think Doncaster will suit him perfectly. Big, long, straight there. Mm. The only worry I've got about him is that...
It's not in the pedigree, is it? I mean, a few people have said to me, you know, why is everyone chalking up this DXB? Because the pedigree says that but the pedigree probably says he doesn't want a mile and a half, and he showed that he needs every inch of that. So.
Yeah, that's true, but it's a very good pedigree. It's a very good... That's one thing maybe we should touch on, is that pedigree does play a massive part in the winners of these big races, and we know that... Massar's very well bred, but DXB himself's from the family of Dubai Millennium. You know, he's a very, very well bred horse. I just worried that they'll want to go to Ireland, and then they'll probably run him in the Voltigeur, and then he'll go to the. Do you know what I mean? He'll have a tough tart. He'll have a load of tough races before he gets to Doncaster. But if ever there was a horse for me that ran a race with St. Ledger written all over it, it would be DXB.
Yeah, gorgeous horse. Binners, any final words from you?
Well, I did really enjoy Hazapur's performance, Maddie. You've already mentioned that he looked a blatant non-star. It'll be interesting to see where Dermot Rex rocks him up. I see he's not really in our Eclipse betting. I'd imagine 10 furlongs, possibly Royal Ascot. But later on in the year, something like the Irish Champion Stakes or the Judmont would look to be absolutely ideal for that fellow.
Okay, so we've covered the Derby in all its glory. We'll be back to talk about the Coronation Cup just after this.
Success ain't earned, it's bought. That's why at Paddy Power, we paid the big bucks for the best tech nerds in the world to develop our new fastest ever app. Download the new app from the App Store or Play Store now. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Welcome back to this Monday postcast. Now, I think we could spend a whole postcast time worth talking about Cracksman and his win in the Coronation Cup. It's been announced that he banged his head in the stalls. John Gosden said and Frankie Dettori said he was sleepy in the early stages, never going at all, didn't handle the track. There's been all sorts said about this race. Tom, what was your thoughts immediately after the race?
I was slightly surprised about all the negativity, to be honest. If you take the second horse out of the race, which got probably the ride of the season by Sylvester D'Souza.
Do you not think he should? A lot of people said he should have got the rail.
God, that's. I mean, if you look at Racing Post ratings or any figures, that would be his best run by £20. I think that's splitting hairs to say the least. I thought he got an absolute wonderful ride.
Yeah.
You would say that he's beaten the German Derby winner by 3.5 lengths. He's beaten Idaho, who won the Hardwick last year by 8 lengths, and he's beaten the Eclipse winner by 35 lengths. And
so you think they run their races?
I think they did, yeah.
Yeah.
I think they did, yeah. And I just, you know, we all expected Cracksman to be the wonder horse that he looked at at Ascot last year. But, you know, you've been around a long time. It's very hard for horses to keep putting up performances like that on a track that was definitely favouring those out front. I thought he did incredibly well to make up the ground on a brilliantly ridden horse that was second, and I wouldn't be disappointed with him at all. I thought he was fine. Really was fine.
You weren't worried about how sluggish he was early? He was really travelling. Was it the track? Do you just think it was a bad day at the office?
He's been a bit like that, hasn't he? He's always a bit like that. He's always a bit sluggish. Ever since he was, when he won the Derby trial there last year, didn't he? He took for ages to get going. He's just a bit sluggish. I agree with John Gosden. Probably the track is not his best.
Yeah.
It doesn't really suit him. He's a big, high V knee actioned horse, and it probably doesn't suit him running down the hill at all. I totally understand that. But in terms of what he did up the home straight, I certainly wouldn't be disappointed with him. I thought he did really well to catch that horse. And as I say, there were some good horses behind. And if you're one of those people that wants to say they all ran below form, that's fine. But I thought he did well to win, and only really good horses would have won that race, and he's one of them.
Final question. Were the bookies right to push him out after that win?
For the arc?
Well, for numerous targets. I think they clipped him back in. Binners will be able to clarify in a minute afterwards. But immediately after, they pushed his odds out, didn't they? Do you think they were right to do that?
I wouldn't be in a hurry to take him on any time in any race myself, especially with a bit of soft ground. Nice, level, flat track. We saw what he did at Ascot. I do love the fact that John Gosden always bangs on him. He always goes, oh, he's a man now. He was not a man last year, and he was a teenager last year, and now he's a man, and all this kind of nonsense. You know, that horse put up the performance of the season in my eyes at Ascot last year. If he's not a man then, he hasn't put up a performance like that since. I think he's a wonderful horse. I hope we get to see him at Royal Ascot, and I think he's still the one to beat in the arc.
Okay, Watsy, we'll let you get your word in hedgerows now. What did you make of Cracksman?
Yeah, no worries. I had very similar thoughts to Tom, really. I've got no concerns going forward. I was pleased that the bookies pushed him out a little bit because I'm not concerned one iota about, his races going forward. I think, the really, really good horses find a way to win even when things don't go their way, and that's what he did. I didn't know about him banging his head on the stalls at the start. That might explain something. But I think he lost the bulk of his ground when they were running downhill. And with the way Silvestre de Souza rode Saloin, it meant all of a sudden, in a very short space of time, he had a huge amount of ground to make up on difficult, kind of tacky ground. And Saloin's no mug either. He's not the kind of horse you can give, must have been about 6 or 7 lengths clear at one stage, with not very far to go. And like you said, if you were being really, really picky, you could have said Silvestre, if you go to the rail, he would have won the race. But I think that's very, very harsh. He did leave a gap there for Cracksman. It probably helped him, galvanised him a little bit. And he's gone there and done it. And I've got nothing but positives about the horse. I mean, for a track that he hates, he's won there twice and he's finished placed in a Derby. So I think that shows his class. And I think when he gets back on a more conventional track, as he will do at Ascot next time, you'll see an even better performance. So I've only got positives to say about him, nothing negative at all. He's pulled out the fire, and all credit to him.
So, Binners, what was the immediate reaction, and then how have events unfolded since Cracksman's run?
Well, we really weren't impressed after the race, Maddie. We pushed Cracksman out to 11-4 from an odds on 4-5 for the Prince of Wales Stakes. We did the same sort of thing in the arc. We went 100-30 from 5-2. That now looks a complete overreaction. Punters have come in for him at those sort of prices. The Prince of Wales, he's not much bigger than 5-4 with any company. And as for the arc, the 100-30 has gone now. We're back to 11-4. So perhaps we underestimated the performance. And bearing in mind Mr. Gosden's comments about the way the horse banged his head on the stalls, perhaps it was a far better effort than it looked visually on the day.
Okay, moving on now to the Investec Oaks, won by Forever Together. We've all got to make sure we get that one the right way round. Would you fancy any of the beaten fillies to reverse the form at the Curra, Watsy?
No, not really. I think Wild Illusion and Forever Together, they kind of took the race up quite a long way out. Nothing in behind really got into it. Magic won, was third. I think Flattering was fourth or fifth. it was only really between the two of them for most of the way up the straight. I thought Wild Illusion surprised it had gone outstayed by the O'Brien horse, because I thought the one thing she would do would be to keep on very, very strongly to the line, because she is very stoutly bred as well. So once she kind of loomed up, I thought, oh, she's gonna run away with this and win it because of her stamina. She didn't. I don't know quite what to make of the form or anything like that, because Forever Together, as promising as she was at Chester, it was still a maiden coming into the race. And I think it was 83 the last time that a maiden won the Oaks. So, but then, of course, it's Aidan O'Brien we're talking about. I remember Peeping Fawn running in this race a few years ago as a maiden. I think she got beaten by Lightshift, but then she won about the next six or seven races and turned into an absolute superstar. So these O'Brien horses are so well-bred, they can just take a massive leap forward sometimes and go on and become brilliant. And, and maybe Forever Together has just taken time to get the hang of things, and now she's there, and she's going to be a big force for the rest of the summer. So I imagine she'll go to the Irish Oaks next. I wouldn't expect anything to beat her.
Okay, Tom, what do we make of this year's crop of three-year-old fillies?
In general?
Oh, yeah, blimey. Just how good do you think they are?
Not brilliant, but no. I think she is. I think she was exceptional. I really did. I was
won by a long way in the end,
yeah,
didn't she?
Yeah, I was really impressed with her. She was strong at the finish. I think after, I think when we did a podcast after, I think a few of us mentioned that we'd fancy her to reverse the form there. I think the thing about Aidan O'Brien is that the horses, he uses the track to get his horses to a peak. So trial form is a little bit irrelevant. I mean, we've seen that in all the trials this year, haven't we? All the winners have been beaten in their last run, I think, bar Saxon Warrior. Do you know what I mean? Forever Together and Romanized and Bilsdon Brook. Do you know, they've all come with sort of trial form that you wouldn't fancy and come out and win. So I'm not at all surprised. She's a beautifully bred filly. She won as easily as any filly I can remember in a few years winning the Oaks. I think she's really, really good. I think she'd give Massauer a race. I really do.
Oh, really? That's
interesting. Yeah, I do. I like her. I thought she was exceptional. And she's only had four runs. Two of them were probably a washout last year. And if they ran her in the Irish Derby and they did it with qualify, I would give her a shot of winning. Definitely give her a shot of winning.
So, Binners, what are your final thoughts on Forever Together? Were you as impressed as Tom?
Well, actually, I think Wild Illusion might beat her next time, Maddie. But I must give superlative ITV racing presenter Ed Chamberlain a mention. When I was at Chester the other week, when the stable companion Magic Wand won the Cheshire Oak, I gave him a price for her for the Oak. And he sent his floor manager running over to me and saying, have you got a price on Forever Together? Which I managed to acquire for him. So Ed Chamberlain is obviously good at watching horses in running. I think Wild Illusion may beat the winner on better ground. And just from a bookie's point of view, Wild Illusion was backed as if defeat was out of the question and was the only horse in the race, really, that punters wanted on the day.
Okay. Moving swiftly on, another horse who entered the Arc picture somewhat at the weekend was Study of Man, at the Prix de Jockey Club winner. Probably not all that impressive to the eye. What did you make of his effort?
Yeah, not massively impressive to the eye. It was a bit of a bunch finish, wasn't it? I'm sure he could be very good. I think we've talked about the French classics before on this podcast. I think after the Guineas, the Poulain and the Pouliche. And there's something about French classics which is a bit of a turn-off these days. And so, you know, you had Epsom and Shanty at the weekend. Two great races, two great derbies. But, you know, I was obviously all over Epsom and made sure I watched that, and I did catch the French version as well, but just doesn't quite have the same gravitas at the moment. I think the French, you know, overall are struggling a little bit. This might be an exception to the rule, but I'm not sure the form is worth a great deal at the moment, and I'd want to see him back that up. So I'm kind of, you know, out of this one at the moment. Could be very good, but, you know, the French classics generally are just a bit of a turn off for me right now.
I think Tom probably echoes those thoughts, do you, Tom?
No, well, I agree with them, but I like the horse a lot. I think in terms of form, it's probably not very good, but I think in terms of what he did to win, I think he's probably very, very good. The point is, I think, is that they went very hard, didn't they? They started racing a long way out. Olmedo pulled too hard, got to the front, and he's a miler, and he set the race up for finishers. And Study of Man got to the front a long way out and then fought off all the finishers. Very, very, it's very hard to do that, Maddie, when you've been involved in the heat of the race. he was ridden to win the race against Olmedo and all the fancied ones. And then at the end of the race, sort of all these, you know, horses were flying at him from left, right and centre, and he still pulled out enough to win. I think he's undoubtedly a mile and a half horse. I wouldn't underestimate him at all, because I think he's an awful lot better than he showed on Saturday. In terms of form, I get it. You can't make a case for him being any good on terms of form or being in the Massal range in terms of form. But I think in terms of potential and in terms of what we will see going forward, I think he's right up there.
Okay, so they all end up in the arc then. How good do you think Study Man does? How does he compare to the rest? Massal, Forever Together, we've mentioned them all, Cracksman even.
I think he'll be a big player, because I think he'll be trained specifically for the arc. I think we're going to see Massar and all those other ones bashing heads well before then. I think I would imagine Study of Man might do Grand Prix de Paris and then the Niel and then the arc or something like that, something along those lines, and be peaking at the end of the season. Also, though, I've got to mention, I had a few quid on Andre Fabre's horse that won the Grand Prix de Chanty. If you haven't seen that, have a look at Waldgeist. Now, I know last year he was a massive disappointment. He finished, but let's not forget, he finished right on the heels of Cracksman in the Irish Derby. After that, he sort of lost his way a bit, but he's come back better than ever. He's a really, really good horse, that. And he won the Grand Prix, I think it was Chanty or whatever it's called, one of those Grand Prix's, Monaco Grand Prix or whatever it's called. he won it very, very easily. I think he's just a totally different horse this year. I think I might have had a bit of 33-1 with your mob the other day. Not very much, but I thought he was very interesting. I don't know what's if you've seen it, but have a look at that, because he looked good.
Okay, moving on then. Finally, just some horses for your Racing Post tracker. Binners, I'll go across to you first. Anything catch your eye?
I really like the two-year-old that Richard Fahey conducted a successful raid with, Cosmic Law. Maddie, a two-year-old by No Nay Never, absolutely routed the field. Often a good race at Woodcote at Epsom. PJ McDonald opined that a stiff 6 furlongs will suit the horse even better. So I think Richard's got a genuine contender for the Coventry Stakes at the Royal Meeting.
Yeah, okay, Tom.
Well, it was Waldgeist. That's the one I would take out the weekend. I was really impressed with him.
That's fine. What's he?
Yeah, there's one at Navan, actually, funnily enough, which I caught up with, called Giuseppe Garibaldi, who is a horse of Aidan O'Brien's, who got off the mark at the weekend in the Mile 5 Maiden. He was actually the second favourite. He had the odds-on favourite too, Cypress Creek, beaten into second. He won very, very nicely indeed. Could well be a Queen's Vase horse along those lines. I wouldn't be surprised. You need to be quite highly rated as a three-year-old to get into the E-ball these days. Wouldn't be surprised if he turned out to be. Aidan could get him high enough in the ratings for him to have a crack at something like that. Very interesting for the second half of the season.
Okay, we'll be back after this short break.
Check out Paddy's Rewards Club. Simply place 5 bets of £10 or more across any sport in a week and you'll get a free £10 bet then next week. T&Cs apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Welcome back to this Monday postcast. Now, before we go, I want to get the lads' quick thoughts on the Scottish Sprint Cup. I don't believe we've got any betting on this at the moment, but nevertheless, it should be an intriguing contest as per usual. And I'll also get a Royal Ascot Antipost tip. Tom, first off, have you spied anything in the Scottish Cup?
Oh, blimey. Sprint handicaps sprint at cup. the best of time. I don't know if you saw the one at Epsom on Saturday, Maddie, but I don't know what racing or what papers or what anything anyone had been reading watching that race, but they let the one horse go up the rail. Nothing else went near the rail. I mean, the going stick told you it was miles faster than everything else, and they let the one horse up there. So I don't trust jockeys and trainers when it comes to knowing what they're doing in sprint handicaps. So trying to work out the winner of this one, it's way too hard for me. I'm a big Ian Jardine fan, and I think Mayleaf Shine is a horse that on the up that could win a big race one day, but I'm not sure. Hopefully, if there's a bit of give in the ground, she might be the one I would be looking at, but it's an impossible race at this stage.
It's a long way off. Watsy, any thoughts?
Easy, this. It's my old friend. It's got to be Orion's Bow again.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
No, you've got to write off that last run. I mean, you said he hates York, and you're probably right now. I think he's had 2 or 3 runs there, and he never beats anything at York, but he was favourite for this race last season. I looked it up off a mark of 104, and they sent him off 11-2 favourite. And it's one of those really annoying sprints where he was going really, really well, never got a run, and finished full of running in about 10th place, beaten about 2 lengths. I think he's off 88 or 89 this time, should he run on Saturday. He did run really well prior to the York run. If you write that off, which I think you can because he just hates it there, Than he's handicapped to win one of these. So I'm going in again.
You'd be a rubbish policeman. You're so forgiving. The most forgiving person ever.
I'll tell you what, Maddie.
Not a bad quality to have.
We're going to have York. We're going to have Chess. Every week we're going to have... And what's your one? It's Orion's Bow. Oh, my God.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen. Binners, finally, any Scottish Sprint Cup thoughts?
Well, the first horse box I saw before getting to Epton was Paul Midgley's, and of course he won the Dash with Tanner Sock. Mm. Paul Midgley seems to be an absolute sprint king. So I'm tentative selection at this early stage is Desert Law. He's a course and distance winner. He ran in that Dash. He finished ninth, beaten six lengths, but I don't think he had the best of draws in stall three, although saying that, just that Lord did well from stall one, so he could be another horse to follow in the future. But I'll go for Desert Law at this stage, Maddie.
Okay, excellent. Now, we'll be recording our Royal Oscar Anti-Post special postcast this week. We want one bet from each of you for the meeting. I believe we gave some last week, but we're going again now. Binners, I'll go to you first. A Royal Oscar tip, please.
Well, in the Ascot Gold Cup, always one of my favourite races, Maddie, I'm going to go for David Ellsworth's Desert Skyline. I think he's a huge price at 16-1. He won the Doncaster Cup last year as a three-year-old over 2 miles two. And for Elsie, he seems very bullish about this horse. He was saying that at Ascot, when they get to the 2 mile point, he'll still be travelling while a lot of them won't. And I think he's a massive price at 16-1, Maddie.
Okay, Tom, over to you.
Blimey, I couldn't have found. I hope you're right, Binners. I couldn't find him. I couldn't find him after the race, even if he'd won. I don't think him. But good luck with that one.
Well, thanks, Tom.
Given a few of these, I'll give you three or four. I like Fairyland, wherever she runs. I like Sioux Nation in the Commonwealth Cup. I think Pouvoir Magique has a good chance of winning the Hunt Cup. And I was very, very impressed with John Gosden's two-year-old called... I'm so bad at names. Legends of War. The Scat Daddy horse. I think one thing, though, punters should always look at sires at Ascot, Exceed and Excel Scat Daddy, War Front. Look at them at Ascot and look at Jamie Spencer in the big handicaps. Every single year, it comes up the same. It comes up, you'll make money backing Spencer in the big handicaps at Ascot. And backing sires on the straight track that have a good record there. So those would be my main things. But in terms of specific horses, Pouvoir Magique, Legends of War and Fairyland.
Some great advice there from Tom. Over to you finally, Watson.
Well, if that horse I mentioned earlier, Giuseppe Garibaldi, if Aidan O'Brien runs out in the Queen's Vase, I'd be really interested. And I know there's a few people on the same wavelength with Binners in the Gold Cup, but I've always been a massive Order of St George fan. I've got no reason to desert him now. I think he should have won last season. I think he wasn't given the best of rides by Ryan Moore. I just think he is exceptional, and hopefully he'll go and prove it again in the Gold Cup.
So a few Ascot Gold Cup thoughts, sorry, to round us off there. Thanks for listening as ever, and if you enjoy these shows, make sure you rate, review and subscribe to us on iTunes. We'll see you soon.
Follow Paddy Power on Snapchat. The username is ThePaddyPower, and we promise there won't be any boring snaps about gigs, the weather, or the gym.